welcome to another episode of Inside United. My name is Scott Buchanan, and I have a very special guest here today with us. You might know him as the president of the United Church of God, and he held that title up until very recently. Mr. Vic Kubik, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Scott. It's wonderful to be here.
You've never been on this before, correct?
No, we've just got to changing roles here.
Yeah.
But I'm the guest.
Yeah, well, it's fun. We wanted to kind of do a send-off for you. We know that this podcast was your brainchild, and you've put a lot of work and effort into it. And we wanted you to have this last episode to just kind of talk about some things about you, a little bit of the past and how you got to here, and then a little bit of the future and where you're going. How are you? How are you doing with all this?
I'm doing just fine. My wife Bev and I are doing great. We're looking forward to the next stage of our lives. We are very grateful to have served as president of the United Church of God for the past 9 years. Mm-hmm. It's almost twice as long as the previous predecessor has been, which actually has surprised us, and we're very grateful. We're leaving on a high, and we're grateful for our health. And we're grateful for whatever might be before us.
Oh yeah, I mean that's great. We're really happy for you guys, and we're going to miss you. Obviously, I mean I haven't been here that long. It's only been about 6 months for me, and I can't help but notice that you're leaving right after I get here. So I'm going to try to not take that personally. But you know, I just wanted to say for my own self that you've always just been very, very friendly, and you know, I've had people, ministers especially, who you know, have always gotten my name wrong. And you know, you make it a point to come up and be very cheerful, and you're just very engaging, and I appreciate that. So I just, you know, I want to let you know that we're gonna miss you terribly, but we're happy that you know, you've got some other stuff that you want to get done and move on to that.
Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you for sharing those sentiments. I do love people. My wife and I both have been around people a lot. And we really want people to be successes, you know, not only fulfill whatever role they have, but to be successes. And I'm a very relationship-oriented person. I'm just very concerned about how people feel about one another, because how they feel about one another will determine how well they work with one another.
Right.
And that's why I am the way I am.
Well, I think it works really well, especially in a leadership position. So just getting into things, I'll just share with the audience. In my time here, I've been able to go back through the old video logs of when United started. And when I was looking through all that stuff, I saw a very young Mr. Kubik talking about how important it was that we get this new church off the ground, and we stay true to our original beliefs and how to go about doing that. Could you share with us what it was like getting United up and off the ground? Because I know that you were a very integral part of that.
Well, first of all, we didn't want to get a new church off the ground.
Okay.
That wasn't our point. We had, at one point in our lives, come to our body of beliefs, the faith once delivered, as we call it, and which is different from mainstream Christianity.
Right.
And we found that the leadership of the church at that time was going back to the beliefs that we had come out of. Mm-hmm. And in a way, like, we are to come out of that, and now all of a sudden it's like, it's a round trip. It's going right back into that. And I thought, that's not where we want to go. It isn't that we didn't understand the new. We understood it full well, and that's why we left it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a matter of theology, first and foremost.
Right.
There were doctrinal changes, so to speak, or doctrinal coming back to beliefs that we had. Some of the more obvious ones was going to worship on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was remember the Sabbath. That was one reason that I was interested in what we call the truth years and years ago, back when I was in high school. And I always wondered about why we kept Sunday when it says biblically you have to remember the Sabbath. I know I had to go to my priest and have discussions with him. And he admitted that Sunday was a change.
Mm-hmm.
And he admitted that the Bible did mean Saturday is the Sabbath.
Right.
And I said, well, why don't we do that? Well, he gave, you know, the various reasons that are the standard reasons for it. I said, how can somebody change the commandments of God?
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that brought me to the what I call the truth, you know, and I wanted to observe that. And it took a lot. It was a change of friends. It was awkward. It was something that was very debilitating, but we wanted to stay to what was true.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when United came about was because the leadership of that church at that time, my direct bosses, wanted to go back to that. That's the simple thing. And there were so many other changes. And it was going back to the mainstream of what we had come out of.
Right. Yeah. I remember during that time I was pretty young. I was only about 9, but I distinctly remember us getting up and walking out of church. And sometimes at the feast, my dad would take us out into the hallway during the sermon, and that never ever happened before. So we didn't understand really what was going on, but you know, of course, eventually we left Worldwide and came into United.
Well, the same thing here. We didn't understand, and we weren't starting something new. In fact, we just left. We just didn't know what to do with ourselves. Mm-hmm. We had no new church to go to.
Right.
So we just sat there and worshiped with others, first of all. We're similar to what we were, but we said we have to do something.
Mm-hmm. And so was there just kind of like a groundswell of members that were meeting with each other, and you all just decided at some point, you know, that something has to be done about this, so... you know, let's pool our resources together and get something moving. Was that?
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Okay.
Where we, of like mind. At that time, I worked in church administration. Mm-hmm. And so I had, you know, many contacts there. And there were many, many people who said, what's going on? And, you know, I can't be living a lie.
Right.
I can't say that everything is fine. Because people were disturbed in the exact same way. Mm-hmm. And those who started those new changes just had no concept of what it means to believe, and how do you meddle, and how do you mess with somebody else's faith? Mm-hmm. How do you mess with somebody's faith about things that are eternal, and then where you feel like if you go back to that, you're going into something that is wrong. You can't live that way.
Yeah.
And so they seem to say, well, can't you just change? Why do you have to stay to what you have done all these years, which we had a great sacrifice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I felt like I was very devout, actually, in my former church. I was Ukrainian Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And actually, at one point, I even thought about the priesthood. You know, mm-hmm. Not that I would have gone into it, but I kind of toyed with the idea because I was interested in theology.
Right.
My interest in theology led me to really examine these things probably more closely. And I loved the priest, the people, the church. And it was very, very hard, an extremely painful move to move away from that. And we got a lot of flack and heat, you know, from that. And now all of a sudden we're told that what we did was wrong and that we need to go back to that and, you know, to worship in that same way. And I thought this is just unacceptable.
Right.
It was a very, very tumultuous time in our life.
Mm-hmm. I bet, yeah. And it seemed like that for a lot of people. Like you said, sacrificing as much as you did and then being told that all of that was for nothing, I can't imagine how raw that must have made a lot of people feel.
Well, it made a lot of people feel that way because they would, for example, I just remember some of the exact examples, maybe not the greatest examples, but, you know, the people were taken out of, they didn't involve themselves in Friday night sports, mm-hmm. in activities on the Sabbath day, Saturday, and all of a sudden they're told, oh, it's okay. You could have done that. And I thought, how destructive is that to a family's values that somebody all of a sudden out of the blue can make those changes for you? And it was done very, very, I felt heavy-handed. Mm. It wasn't done in love. It wasn't done. It was done to, hey, we've come to this and to the ministry. Was basically that you have to make these changes or there's no future for you in this organization that you've been a part of and pastor and cared for people.
Mm-hmm.
That was all that together was extremely painful, and you felt powerless to be able to buck the system at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed as to how few people like that could take a bully position like that and make those types of changes for an entire organization.
So the founding of United, and then United moved from California to here in Ohio. What was that like?
Well, we started, you know, in California, mm-hmm. in Arcadia, and I took a position, first of all, with in the administration at that time. But then I was my position was changed to being a field pastor once again,
mm-hmm.
and I was moved to Indiana, mm-hmm. to pastor churches in Terre Haute and Lafayette.
Okay.
So that's sort of, and I lived in Indianapolis at that time.
Okay.
And then the whole church actually decided to move out of California to more central location in the country. And, you know, the population center of the U.S. is very close to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I believe the population center is exactly Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so we're about 100 miles from Lexington, and that was the population center. That was one of the criteria, mm-hmm. you know, for the church moving here. and it was cheaper to live here.
Oh, yeah.
And so back in 1998, I believe, or so, we moved here to Ohio.
So you were a local pastor for a while, and then eventually we had some more kind of tumultuous times here in United. And then through a series of events, you've found yourself as president. How did that all come down?
Well, I was pastor, and at that time also, I've always been part of what's called the Council of Elders, mm-hmm. which is the ruling board, the governing board of the church. And we had another crisis, you know, within the church. Actually, we've had a few times where people wanted to take over mm-hmm. and people wanted their way. I would say that's probably been the biggest thing. We had a crisis in 2000, starting in 9, 8, 9, 10, where there was a move to Texas. Mm-hmm. And we just felt like, here we have a building, it's all paid for.
Right.
It was centrally located. And yet there were some people, once again, in a very small group that wanted to have their way. And so they wanted to move to Texas when there were many people who did not want that. Mm-hmm. And so that led to kind of a division in the church, which was very, very sad.
Yeah.
But one thing that I have, in fact, today we had a focus meeting with the staff here. Mm-hmm. I told them about, you know, as we go to the future, to stay united.
Yeah.
You know, don't allow things to come and divide us. I talked about farewells, and probably the most famous farewell in the Bible is the Apostle Paul saying farewell to the elders of the church in Ephesus mm-hmm. in Acts chapter 20. You know, he talks about the church, you know, teaching the faith, talking about repentance towards God and faith, you know, in Jesus Christ. He talked about the work of the church, but he said that people will come among you who will try to scatter, who mm-hmm. will try to destroy the unity that you have with you. And that's one thought I wanted to leave with people, that there will be trial coming upon the church. Don't allow it to do those things.
Yeah.
And I have been, as president, not only have I had longevity in this position, but we've had a time of peace. Mm-hmm. We honestly have. And, you know, you're talking about just becoming president and what was the road to that. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no real road to it. I became president. Maybe you want to talk, we can talk about that too.
Yeah.
In a way that was not perhaps standard, you know, where you choose among candidates, but we had a death of a president before mm-hmm. and we quickly chose a new president, and I happened to be the one and not really knowing what I was getting into. I mean, I know what they did, you know, but I just didn't think of myself as aspiring to that position or knowing that one's term was coming to an end and so maybe I could be the one. Not at all. But as we talk today, we talked about the importance of being peaceful, to have an environment where we can work and an environment that is conducive to growth. Mm-hmm. God will bless us with progress. God will bless us with growth if we obey him, if we're humble enough to work together, where we don't push our ideas, you know, on somebody else, mm-hmm. you know, and we don't have pride. Those are the things that really are destructive.
Yeah.
And I would say that the biggest danger in leadership always has been, in my observation, has been pride. Has been people who have been filled with vanity or overinflated importance of themselves, and that has caused undue problems.
I would agree with that, and I would say that the best instances of leadership I think that historically has been proven is people that weren't looking for that role, people mm-hmm. that didn't want it necessarily. Like George Washington, I think, is a prime mm-hmm. example. He set up steps in place that would make sure that he wouldn't continue to have power. He didn't want it. He wanted to get rid of it as soon as possible. I think that quality is what makes a good leader. And so when you're saying about how you weren't seeking the position, it just kind of, it came to you. I'm sure that was divinely inspired, because that's the kind of leadership that we need.
Well, I told the Council of Elders, you know, after my term ended here, that I hope that the new president isn't one who is just really wanting it so bad. I mean, he's dripping with desire, right. you know, to want to have it, because that would be the worst possible choice mm-hmm. to have a person who's just lusting after that position. And the Bible speaks, you know, the New Testament, of flaws in leadership. You know, one of them was when Simon Magus, this is actually the early days of the New Testament church, who saw the miracles of the apostles and saw them healing people and saw them doing all kinds of things that were, you know, beyond just the natural movement of things.
Right.
And he says, hey, I want to have that power. Mm. I want to be able to do that. I would like to be looked up to. I'd like to have that power. And he was willing to pay money for it.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, he came to Peter and said, I want to buy this position. Here, I'll give you money. And Peter said, nope, you know, you and your money, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, that's the right attitude to have.
And so that's a person who was just enthralled with the glory and the power that was publicly shown. Yeah,
the status of it all.
The other one is Diotrephes. This is in the 2nd John, I believe, where the Apostle John writes in a short letter about coming. This had to be in the 80s or 90s. I mean, this was towards the end of the first century in the church. And he talked about coming to a church area where there was an elder called Diotrephes who loved the preeminence, who loved to be important, you know, full of pride, who received us not. And here John is a person who had been an apostle, an eyewitness, and even a relative of Jesus Christ, cousin of Jesus Christ. Here he was, a person really in the know, and he was put off by this other elder called Diotrephes who loved the preeminence and received us not. So here was that person. Yeah. And what I spoke about today in Acts chapter 20 was about the Apostle Paul who told the church at Ephesus, and that's a church that he had been in a long time, longer than any other, which was, by our standards, maybe not that long. It was 3 years. He hadn't been in an area that long before. He was more itinerant, going from one area to another, whether it's Asia Minor or Greece. And he had been in Ephesus, and he really developed a bond and a love for those people. And he says, be careful. He says, after I leave here, there'll be coming ferocious people that will come here and tear the flock apart. So he's warning them of these things that would happen. So these are concerns that I have, because that's always been there. There's something ecclesiastical. There's something in the ecclesiastical world in service to God where it draws upon people who love to be noticed, love to be looked in that unnatural way. And
And I would say that I saw that more with our previous organization, the one that we all came out of. You know, my family alone has a lot of stories of people in power who didn't treat them the best. And so I would say coming out of that, I think that, you know, there's been a refinement process of people whose hearts have been tested and have shown themselves capable of undertaking that kind of leadership position. So, you know, I we're all with you. You know, we all agree that we'd like to see this era of peace that we've had continue, and we would like to, you know, we'd like to see service-oriented leadership continue on.
And that's really just following the example of Jesus Christ. You know, he's the one who humbled himself to become nothing as a human being compared to what he was. And he was one who gave his life, and it was humble. He wasn't preoccupied with his position. And that is spoken of very clearly in the book of Philippians.
So I'm just going to switch gears a little bit here. One of the things that we've been focusing on a lot lately is the situation in Ukraine. And, you know, a fair amount of the last several podcasts have been about Ukraine. And so is there any kind of an update you can give to us since the last time we talked about that?
Well, today is, what, May 9th? Actually, quite a big day in Russia because it's Victory Day over Nazi Germany. And so they're having big parades and all kinds of events there. And they wanted to actually end the war today by defeating Ukraine, and they have not. So the story of the war is a very sad one, as tens of thousands of people, military and civilian, have been killed so needlessly in a war that didn't have to happen between people who speak the same language, who have similar roots. And it's just been an extremely, you know, sad situation. And I'm Ukrainian, as I had mentioned earlier, in my background. So we still have family over there, family that has had to flee cities like Kharkiv. I have a cousin who's, he and his wife and his family have fled to Western Ukraine. And we have many friends that we work with in a children's rehabilitation center in northern Ukraine, in Chernihiv, which is very, very close to Chernobyl. It's about 30 miles due east of Chernobyl. And that city was 70% destroyed. A city of 300,000 people is down to 100,000, 200,000 people have fled the area. So it's a very, very sad situation. Plus, Also, another area we work in is in Western Ukraine with Sabbath keepers that we have worked with now for more than 25 years, people whom we love and people who've even had their children come to Ambassador Bible College. And some of these people are working to provide food, to be the arms who are distributing food that we are purchasing and helping distribute in Western Ukraine. So it's a very sad situation as far as humanitarian things are concerned. Ukrainians are putting up a stiff fight, but it's very, very costly. There's a lot of death. So that's kind of where it's at. The war is still going back and forth, with Ukraine putting up a stiff resistance and the world supplying it with weaponry and that type of thing. But we hate to see all this happening.
I know there have been several instances in world history where we tend to look at world events and we're like, okay, well, the end is coming quicker now. And so you don't want to jump to conclusions, but it is certainly good to be prepared and to keep watch, like the Bible says, and to keep an eye out for things that are coming down the line.
Well, today you just got to bring up the question about Ukraine right on top of the talking about the church. We need to be mentally, spiritually prepared for what's ahead of us and not fall asleep. And the good news is that things will turn out okay. It's just that it's very tough going. Not being prepared is to be oblivious to what's going on and not believing that God really does have this in hand.
Right.
Because, you know, we see all this, and I pray to God, says, stop this thing, you know, please. You know, my relatives, the people I know, people that we love, are dying, you know, in this.
Right.
And it is hard. It's really hard. And I think to myself, when this happens in our country, which, you know, prophetically we know that these things are going to take place, and will people be prepared? Will people be knowing that there is an end to it, that God is going to bring this thing to an end?
Yeah.
So those are the things that we're living through right now. As I was talking this morning, you know, we drove to work today, you know, we have gasoline, we have food and everything, but there's a threat of all these things being threatened.
Right.
Prices going up, shortages, even coming to a point of being extreme shortages. And we have to ask God to protect us, to protect our children, to protect the people that we love, and be prepared for this.
Right. I would say that coming out of the last 2 years with all this COVID stuff, I would hope that we could take some of the lessons that we learned during this time of keeping cool and not being so quick to accuse and really having each other's best interest at heart. Hopefully we can take those lessons going forward for when things get, I mean, because things were bad, but they weren't Book of Revelation bad yet. You know, I mean, this might be a precursor, we don't know. But things are going to get way, way worse. And if it's not now, it'll be soon. So let's not repeat the mistakes of history. Like I talked about a couple of weeks ago, you know, we need to learn our lessons and then put them into practice going forward.
Right. I feel like the COVID crisis, which was actually one of the low points of my presidency, you know, from the standpoint of shutting down a lot of activities that we did in the church, canceling services for months at a time. This was very, very hard. This is very, very hard. But we had to learn to say that times, hard times will come. And even though we kind of saw the light at the end of the tunnel, these things will happen when we may have to be isolated. We have to communicate in different ways. We'll have to trust God in different ways. We'll have to listen to our leaders. You know, we will have to do things in a more united way with these things that may come upon us. So we have to learn these lessons and not be complainers and not be people who take matters into our own hands. Because with the COVID crisis, I would say one of the hard things was is people who said masks, no mask, vaccinations, no vaccinations. And it just went on and on and on, you know, with the various opinions and trying to find a middle road through all this.
Yeah,
you know?
it was hard to find that middle ground.
And so we tried to take a position of, you know, you leave between you and God, don't judge other people. Worked with some, not with others.
I would agree with that. What are you looking forward to now that you're going to have a lot more free time?
Well, I'm not going to just stop working and
and
staring off in the distance. I've been a person who's always been involved with projects. And one thing that was brought up was LifeNets, my organization, a nonprofit that my wife and I started 23 years ago when we lived in central Indiana. And we started actually by working in the Chernobyl area to helping people there from the Chernobyl disaster. Now these same people are suffering from the war in Russia. They have gone through a whole lot more than we have.
Yeah.
The same people had a real threat of having nuclear, having their city covered with nuclear radiation. And now they're having Russian tanks, you know, entering into the city and street fighting going on. I mean, I'm just thankful to God that we have not had that right here in Cincinnati in that way. But LifeNet started at that time back in 19, actually started officially 99, but I had done work, nonprofit work before that. And we want to continue that work. Right now we're doing a lot of work with Ukraine, and you can go to our website, lifenets.org, lifenets.org, and see, you know, what we are doing. But we've also expanded out to helping in other ways. In Africa, where we have really supplied a lot of young people with scholarships for going to college to be able to be certified or to have an occupation or, you know, some future vocation for a job. People have become accountants, teachers, they've become specialists with technical things. And so we've helped hundreds and hundreds of young people be able to not only get a degree, but also to stay in their country, not be tempted to just leave or flee, you know, to go to other pastures. And so we've tried to build up our churches, our societies and communities overseas, mostly the countries of Zambia, Malawi, you know, South Africa. Also, we have quite a few scholarships that we have distributed in the Philippines and South America, those places. So my wife and I have worked with that, with a group of people, in that way, and we have found funding publicly through our church to help people in an organized way. So we'll continue to work with this. With Ukraine, we have worked very vigorously. We've had a lot of influx of cash. But one thing that we do is we don't just take this cash and pass it on to another organization. We have very, very low overhead in the things that we do, and we work through people we know. Some people that we've known for 50 years, people I've known in college too, who are pastors that, you know, we have worked with, whether it be in Africa or South America. So we will continue to work with that, with LifeNets. And also, as far as other things that I plan to do, I'll continue to have a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, this may be my last podcast officially on Inside United because, you know, I am retiring. You know, not only has my term as president ended, but my wife and I felt like this is the time for us to retire.
Right.
And so I plan to have a podcast, and I have a couple of different websites that I work from, not only LifeNets that I do for the nonprofit, but I also have a website, cubic.org. K-U-B-I-K.org, and I also have a domain, victorcubic.com, so I'll be working from that. But I will have a podcast because I would like to be able to continue conversations like this, you know, with people like you as an interviewer, or I would be the interviewer and talking to people who are interested in things. And I'll be talking about things dealing with matters of helping people, humanitarian things, spiritual things, things that I have come across in my life that I would like to share with others, that I would like them to share with others. And I feel like podcasting is a very, very good medium because you can prepare for it, not by just writing out a long script, but just being able to talk and express your views like we are right now.
Exactly. Yeah, I got bit by the podcast bug a number of years ago. And back when I had my own, it was a nice creative outlet. I'm happy that you're going to continue down that road. And I'm sure we'll all be tuning into that. And right now, we're unsure as to the future of this podcast. We're going to give it some time and see what the new president would like to do. And we'll see. We'll reevaluate here in a couple of weeks.
Right. I'm sure that you will. And I just wanted to be able to step away from it. And I wanted to be able to have my own. And it'll be called something. It'll have my name in it so that it'll be easy to find.
Well, Vic, we're just really proud of you. We're really happy that you're you know, entering this new transition and phase of life. I just want to thank you for your years of service and for, you know, being a steady light that we could look to for an example. And, you know, like I said, I haven't been here that long personally in the home office, but it's been long enough to see your character and your example and the way it just kind of affects the whole building. So.
Well, thank you, Scott. I have appreciated you very much, too. I appreciated you about 3 or 4 years ago when you interviewed us on a podcast. You had your own podcast. I thought, boy, this guy really knows how to do it well.
Well, thank you.
And so that's perhaps why I've been partial to you here. And I have just really appreciated that and just wish you well in what you do here.
Well, thank you very much.
So we're not going away. And, you know, you've said nice things about us. And Bev and I really want to continue doing the things that we have done, but it'll just be done in a different way.
Right. Yeah, different format. Well, thanks again, Vic. And we'll wrap up this episode of Inside United. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be on here in this particular manner.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.